Wealthier women would also put their infants out to be cared for in the homes of villagers.
Well, that was pretty common, though, right? Because they had shit to do.
Yeah, you know, you don't want some baby cramping your style. You know? You gotta go to the cotillion.
Yeah, you gotta go to fucking it's the Buffalo Wild Wings, you know.
Yeah. DJ White's gonna be there.
You have to go to a Central Florida Buffalo Wild Wings instead of taking care of your child.
You gotta go to the Waterford Lakes Buffalo Wild Wings.
Who are we talking about here?
I don't know.
Sure.
Welcome back to the Trilateral Troika. This is Steve, along with the other Steve.
Hello.
And Ryan.
Just so we're absolutely 1,000% clear, we are pouring this one out for Ozzy and not for fucking Hulk.
Listen here, brother.
Listen, brother.
I was almost in Black Sabbath, brother.
Listen, brother. Ozzy asked me to play lead guitar for him, brother, and fill in on vocals when he was resting, brother.
You heard the Metallica story,
listen, brother,
right?
You can't be race mixing. Race mixing's what ruined the world, brother. I'm the Hulk, brother.
I've heard, like whisperings, but I haven't heard the actual Metallica, story.
Well, there's not much of a story. It's just that Hulk Hogan claims that he was almost a Metallica, but he decided to become a professional wrestler instead of be in Metallica, which is ridiculous because he became a wrestler in, the 70s.
Please tell me that... Okay, it doesn't make any sense, but please tell me that James Hetfield has also come out and been like, this dude's a fucking idiot.
Probably not. I don't think anyone's I don't know if anyone's ever even asked him about it.
James Hetfield's a fucking idiot, too, but, you know.
They're too busy, you know, selling their, selling Metallica as a lifestyle brand.
It's funny, when we were like, I don't know how old we were actually, but it was in the 90s. It was like mid-90s, and my buddy Mike and I used to record these skits on cassette tapes. Not video, but like cassette tapes. We'd do like skits. Mm-hmm. And we had one that was like, I think it was the beginning of Battery, the Metallica song Battery. Okay. It's this slow build up, like dun 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 dun.
It's a really good song. I love Battery.
Great fucking song. We were sitting there, and we were selling Metallica cheese.
Oh my fucking god!
It was like Metallica cheese, like that. Because we were fucking joking around about it, but it's funny because it's 20-30 years later. They might just sell some Metallica cheese somehow.
It wouldn't surprise me.
I wouldn't be surprised at all. You go to like some rock club or something, they'll be like, oh, that's the Metallica brie over there. You want them? Yeah. Delicious. It's the only thing Lars will eat.
This isn't. Which one was the one that was on the. That was showing the whiskey? Like, whichever member it is,
Metallica
he's sober.
Does have whiskey. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, but he was showing it and they were talking about it like very like hoity toity, like.
Yeah, I don't know.
Like who, I don't know guy who it talk. Was.
I think James.
I don't know.
Is sober.
I remember who it was.
James, but he's sober. He's sober.
He makes the most sense to have a whiskey company, though.
Yeah, that's true.
Speaking of whiskey companies,
oh god, oh no, I don't like when he does it. Oh no, oh no.
Oh.
No, we're not going to be talking about whiskey companies. You know, Buffalo Trace is fine. You know, you don't have to worry about him this week.
Thank God, I'm literally drinking Coke and so. All right,
if you're drinking, don't tell me you mix Buffalo Trace. I'm gonna be real mad.
No. Right. Christmas White Elephant at work. I got probably 13 or 14 different little shot bottles, little you know what I'm talking about, like little tiny shooter bottles of different whiskeys.
Yeah, we call them. We actually refer to them as friendship ruiners.
Okay, so yeah. I got like 15 of those at like a work White Elephant Christmas thing, and this is Coke in Woodford Reserve.
I don't have a problem with that. I don't drink Woodford. I don't drink really.
I've never had Woodford before, but I was like, you know what? It says it's 45.2% alcohol, and I have regular Coke, so this will be fine.
Well, that makes sense because it is whiskey. So. Anyway, who are we talking about this week? Hogan?
We're going to be talking about obsolete jobs. We're going to wait to talk about Hogan because I'm sure there's going to be a lot of like family drama and like Jimmy Hart, Brian Knobs, and Brutus Beefcake like killing each other, trying to like.
I just want to see the courtroom sketch of Jimmy Hart's like his fucking jacket when he goes into court, because you know he always had those loud ass crazy fucking jackets to like match everything with the attitude. I just want to see like a courtroom sketch where she's trying to like sketch the jacket, but somehow enter some Lovecraftian fucking horror realm because she just can't follow the lines. It's like,
I just want to.
What the fuck's going on here?
I just want to hear the transcription where it's just like Jimmy Hart's like, "Get on her, mama."
Objection, mouth of the South.
I just want to, like, I need Steve to promise me that one day he's going to come in here with, like, a 7-part WWF series of, like, deep diving into, like, all the old wrestlers. Because, I mean, like, technically that counts as history now.
Right. Dude, Hulk Hogan is a historical figure, like it or not.
All right. Take a breath. No, he's not.
Absolutely he is.
Brother.
Millions.
Also, I didn't know that he was
millions
of
people.
Eight.
Yeah, he's huge.
I didn't know he was 6'8", bro.
He's holy big. Shit. He might be a little shorter than that because they pumped those numbers a little bit.
Yeah, you had to be back
be
in
a
those days, like
for Vince.
Yeah, WWF wouldn't hire anybody who was like under. I think even today, generally the thing is Vince wouldn't hire anybody under 6 foot because he would say that they were a midget. And
yeah, but I mean, like, people like Rey Mysterio were in there.
Yeah, but like there were special
so
cases. There were also cases where like. When like Brian Danielson got signed with them, he got I forget which wrestler it was that was the road agent that hired him, but he lied about his height to get him hired.
Oh no!
And then he got hired and he was good and he like had a full run there, but when they brought it up to him, he said, "I don't know, it looked like he was 6 foot to me." Or 6 foot whatever to me.
I bet you that guy also has a 6-inch penis.
Anyway, what I was going to say was, yeah, he's definitely a historical figure as much as he's a piece of shit. You know, like, you can't deny the fact that probably hundreds of millions of people were his fans at some point. I mean, he was a worldwide figure. And, yeah, and he's not going to let his daughter marry just any random N. That comes in the house. Okay, he's only gonna let her marry those 8 foot tall ends that play in the NBA.
One is an athlete.
Yeah,
gotta make that money.
You have to remember too, like when Nick went to prison, you know, he told him like you need to team up with the Blizzaks.
Oh my god. Ugh.
So speaking of the Blizzaks,
hold on, I gotta puke up this sushi, brother. I got diarrhea from the sushi during my sex tape, dude.
So the first profession we're going to be talking about that no longer exists is referred to as a baby farmer.
Oh, my God.
Now, that exists. There's certain Christian churches. That's all they do. We need more tithing. When little Michael Ernie is born, I hope it's twins. That's 10% from each of them.
Unironically, that is called the quiverful movement, like an arrow quiver.
I am well aware of that one, actually, because one of our favorite board game guys is a member of that.
That's pretty, I mean, not in our context what we're going to be talking about, but the quiverful movement is basically baby farming. Just have as many children as humanly fucking possible.
Yeah. Well, these people are not actually, like, creating the children.
Right.
We'll get to.
Huh. Oh, that's interesting.
So historically, foster care within
so what do they do?
History,
like order them from China? Like what? How do they get the kids?
Well, we'll get to that.
The team nightstands? Don't you remember that whole saga back in like was it 2017? The kids that were like, you could order a child online on Temu if you ordered the right kind of like nightstand or Alibaba or something.
It wasn't Temu. It was the furniture company.
Yeah, it's like you order the right kind of nightstand, and it'll give you like a kid.
It's like these people saw License to Drive or something like that when they would order with the pizza with anchovies. meant that you were ordering the male hooker.
Well,
it's hilarious.
The thing that they did was they went on Yandex, and they were searching, and they would put in like a name, and then it was Wayfair. And
sorry,
then,
not License to Drive, Lover Boy. That's what it was.
Yes, yeah. In Wayfair, yes.
But when they the way they were searching it, what it was doing was it was bringing up the website with the name, but it was just attaching it to a random thing in the just like a random item in their store because of like the way Yandex works and the way that their database worked, that the query was still like pulling up something But the text they had, the other text was meaningless. It was just still attached to it. So they were convinced that when they did that and it would be like a locker or something, they're like, it's like, if you were in that locker, there's going to be a child inside it.
Oh my. How the fuck has nobody called IKEA out on their naming of Alex as like a chest of drawers? Like, I want an Alex. Let me order an Alex offline off IKEA. Or just the Swedes, just we trust them too much.
Dude, I'm going to be honest with you. Of all the things you could have shit on IKEA about, you're getting them on that, Alex? There's some fucking, there's some goddamn furniture in that store where if you can pronounce it, then that triggers the final like bell toll that starts the world end. You know, like Ragnarok comes. If you could pronounce the end table's name, you say it. No, don't say it. 16 fucking Swedish people just attack you as you start to finish the last syllable. But you went with Alex. Alex is nice. Oh, man. We were just over there. I haven't been there in a long time.
I have a desk, and my desk is two of the Alex sets of drawers.
Oh,
and
nice.
It's one of like, the tabletops. And it's really nice, but it's just like, if I was going to like target a company to be like, yo, if I order this, I'm getting a child, I wouldn't be targeting Wayfair. I'd be targeting IKEA with their $150 fucking chest of drawers named Alex. Like a literal name on it.
So originally, the fostering of young children was referred to as baby farming. We know this because of a biographer of Jane Austen's, Claire Tomalin, described in the 18th century that middle-class parents would refer to it in this manner and use it. Jane Austen, all of her siblings, they were fostered from a few months old until they were toddlers. Like most sort of social constructs that were created within Great Britain, you know, this is incredibly distancing between the parent and the child for obvious reasons.
Yeah.
This sounds like what we see today as being people that are just like, oh, I'll accept all the foster kids for all the money and then just not taking care of them. It's basically a fucking welfare scam.
Is it?
Yes.
Did they get money for baby farming?
No. If you are somebody who is allowed or allows children that are wards of the state into your home, basically a foster parent, you get paid by the state.
No, I get that. I'm not asking about that. I'm saying the baby farming, who made money?
I couldn't respond to you guys because I cut out and it just, I lost like everything and I come back and you guys are well into this conversation about baby farming.
Wait, so when did you stop talking? Because you said something. Maybe, did you say something when you were cutting out?
I was talking, and then Ryan was talking, and he cut out. But anyways, we'll get to some of those points. So there's also historical context for the impact of baby farming, is that there was a law passed in Great Britain called the Poor Law Amendment Act of 1834, which denied the poor the right to subsistence. Mm-hmm. So this was, you know, when they say send them to the workhouse, this is where that comes from. So single mothers, there are no prisons.
Yeah. Oh, there are no workhouses.
So single mothers were then forced to work in workhouses, which were essentially like labor prisons.
You got to put these fucking bitches to work. Let me tell you.
But in late Victorian Great Britain, and as well, not as common, but also within Australia and the United States, baby farming was the practice of accepting custody of an infant or child in exchange for payment.
Huh.
The baby farmers were paid in the understanding that they would care for the children. The term baby farmer was used as an insult. And improper treatment was usually implied.
Okay, so they were shitty farmers, like a baby farmers. Wait, in one respect you're telling me that that's the name of the gig, and the other respect you're telling me that if someone called you a baby farmer, they were trying to like shit in your cereal. So which one is it?
Because it sounds like baby farmer is a derogatory term for people that are just accepting.
I'm saying though, like, but payment. So is it just referring to the specific assholes or?
it becomes a negative term because of what we're going to talk about.
Oh, okay. That makes more sense. Okay.
I feel like I'm jumping way ahead because I see the end goal, or not the end goal.
Because you're a baby farmer.
I am a baby farmer. No, but like I've seen people and I've spoken to people that they have, like, not even trying to exaggerate, like 5 or 6 kids running around that none of them are theirs. You know you're getting money from the state for each child, but every single one of these children is in a state of neglect. And it's just, you're clearly not spending the money that the state is giving you on these children. Where the fuck is this money going? Because you have 5 or 6 of them running around, and they will tell you, these are my kids, I'm a foster parent, XYZ. And it's just like, so what are you doing with the money? Because the state pays really good money for these children to be taken care of, and they are clearly not.
Yeah. Yeah.
So a lot of this had to do with the fact that a lot of these babies that were being farmed out were illegitimate.
No kidding. You're mothers, telling me that legitimate babies didn't end up in a system of passing babies around?
Well, they did. Well, they did, but because of the social stigmas attached with being a single mother, these single mothers would quote unquote put their children out to nurse with a baby farmer.
Steve, you don't have to be politically correct and call them single mothers. They're whores, all right?
Whores.
Oh my god.
They're fucking whores.
But this also encompassed foster care and adoption in the period before they were regulated by British law in the mid-19th century.
Wow.
Wealthier women would also put their infants out to be cared for in the homes of villagers.
Huh. Well, that was pretty common, right? Because they had shit to do.
Yeah, you know, you don't want some baby cramping your style, you know. You gotta go to the cotillion.
Yeah, you gotta go to fucking Buffalo Wild Wings, you know?
Yeah. You know that DJ you like's gonna be there.
You have to go to a Central Florida Buffalo Wild Wings instead of taking care of your child.
You gotta go to the Waterford Lakes Buffalo Wild Wings.
Who are we talking about here?
I don't know.
I don't know. I'm sure.
It was more profitable as well for the baby farmer to take lump sum adoptions.
What the fuck, dude? What's up? This is like winning the lottery. Do you want monthly payments, or do you want that a lump sum?
Well, it would be more profitable for them because if the baby died, the small amount of money that they would receive regularly would not cover the care of the child for a long period of time.
Right. Mm.
Some baby farmers adopted numerous children and then neglected them or murdered them outright as well.
Seems counterintuitive. Unless you take the lump sum. If you take the lump sum, the kid's gotta go. I mean. I would take that kid to another country and just put him back in that adoption system. Just be like, I got to get rid of this kid. And they'd be like, okay, we take him, you know. Like, that's how you start the racket. You just move him around Europe the entire fucking time. Oh, wait, that's what Jeffrey Epstein did. Jesus Christ. Steve, did you hear about that? That Obama's the one that let Epstein go about his business. Did you hear that?
Oh, yeah, I heard that. You know, but you know, I heard that the stuff went on with Epstein. You know, sometime between the end of Obama's term as president and then sometime before the beginning of Joe Biden's presidency. I don't know under whose presidency that could be. It's very very confusing.
I don't remember those years.
Several baby farmers were tried for murder, manslaughter, or criminal neglect and were hanged. These include Margaret Waters, executed in 1870, Amelia Dyer, executed in 1896, as well as Amelia Sack and Annie Walters, who were executed in 1903.
Those do not sound like real names.
These women had also killed a number of babies. Margaret Waters had killed 19 children. Or she's believed to have killed at least 19 children.
Fuck, bro. What a monster.
Those are rookie numbers in this game.
Jesus Christ.
Amelia Dyer, she had 6 confirmed, there are
six kills. She's got six kills.
War vet?
They don't know who LaForge is. I heard he's got even six kills.
But it's possible that she may have killed between 200 and 400, over 400 children, making her possibly one of the most prolific serial killers in history.
She would take the crown. Because how are we defining serial killing? That would be, she would take the crown. That's hundreds of people. There can't even be one that's, there's no way there's a serial killer that's even over 100. Maybe not even over 50. That would make her the most prolific serial killer in history. It has to be. Ever. Unless there's some other serial killer I'm not aware of that has killed that many people. Because, I mean, the definition changes at some point. They're not like, you know, we can't call Pol Pot a serial killer. He's a fucking vicious tyrant. It's completely different.
What he did was legal and necessary.
Okay? Shut the fuck up. Jesus Christ. No.
You know, you gotta reset to year zero. And, you know, if you're wearing glasses, you got to go.
M's the rules. I don't make them up. But see, you're wearing glasses. Well, I got grandfathered in.
I got a pass.
Sounds like a Jerry Seinfeld talking to George. But you got a Pol Pot pass? I got one. It's a pass.
Did Kramer come sliding? Jerry, I just got a pass.
Why are we doing a Pol Pot Seinfeld bit? Oh, shit. I'm renaming that. That's the episode name. Pol Pot Seinfeld.
The only woman to be executed in New Zealand was Minnie Dean, who was a baby farmer. Although in 1926, a male baby farmer, Daniel Cooper, was executed for the death of his pregnant first wife and his two subsequent infants.
Wait, he killed his wife and his babies?
He killed his wife, and then he adopted two children and killed them.
Holy shit. Oh my God. That's terrible.
It's like the guy from Killers of the Flower Moon.
Yeah.
That's crazy. Yeah.
Is there a book that movie's based on?
Yeah, it's called Killers of the Flower Moon. It's a historical book.
Steve, I'm aware. God damn it. Oh, man.
In Australia, the baby farmer Francis Knorr was executed for infanticide in 1894. And although John and Sarah Macon were also convicted of infanticide, only John Macon had been executed a year earlier in 1893 for this crime.
They let these bitches get away with everything, you know.
In Scandinavia, there was a euphemism for this activity. Angla
with a baby Mekerska.
But Angla Mekerska, it literally means a female angel maker.
Oh my God.
An undercover investigation of baby farming reported in 1870 in a letter to the Times concluded, "My conviction is that children are murdered in scores by these women, that adoption is only a fine phrase for slow and sudden death." Or slow or sudden death.
Jeez.
Spurred by these series of articles that appeared in the British Medical Journal in 1867, the Parliament began to regulate baby farming in 1872 with the passage of the Infant Life Protection Act.
Okay, what did that say?
It essentially said that, like, you had to actually take care of the child, and they actually start making standards. Because previously there were no standards. Like, you would literally just, like, it was legal for you to just, like, hand over your child to somebody for, like, a Snickers bar.
Oh, man. A Snickers bar.
The London coroner, Athelstan Brixton Hicks, or Braxton Hicks, gave evidence in 1896 on the dangers of baby farming.
Athelstan Braxton Hicks? That is...
Athelstan Braxton Hicks.
That is some fucking British-ass shit there, man.
He gave evidence In 1896, on the dangers of baby farming, to the Select Committee on the Infant Life Protection Bill.
Fuck was his evidence? Just dead babies? Like, check this out. Sack of dead babies came from that lady over there.
One case that he cited was that of Mrs. Arnold, who had been "quote unquote" sweating infants legally by doing so one at a time.
I'm sorry.
Sweeting the infants.
What the fuck does that mean? Would she dope them in fucking sugar milk? What the hell are you talking about? What does that mean?
I'm not entirely sure, but I believe it means that she was, like, poisoning them one at a time.
Wow. That's fucked up.
At another inquest, the jury were of the opinion that there has been gross neglect in the case, but were unable to allocate responsibility.
Hey, I got an idea. How about you don't poison your babies? Sound good?
That's really hard for some people, apparently.
Jerry. I got to do it. You poisoning them? Why are you doing that?
Hey, bro, these are children.
Yeah, but this baby farming, Jerry, I think it's a lock. It's a lock, Jerry.
Oh my god, you're gambling again?
he's only fine with it if it's an infant from a certain place.
Now, come on, I sold all the infants. You gotta let it ride.
Jerry, listen, I found a way to pay my rent.
How are you doing that? You're farming the babies?
Oh, we're selling them, Jerry.
Oh my god, this is how have I never heard of this before? This is absolutely horrendous.
They added the writer that the jury are strongly of opinion that further legislation in what are usually known as baby farming cases is greatly needed, and particularly that the required legislation should extend to the care of one infant only, and that the age of the infant should not be limited to 1 year, but rather to 5 years, and that it should be an offense for any person undertaking the care of such infants to sub-farm it.
Sub-farm it?
Sub-farm it. Listen, yeah.
I live in a town where there is a preponderance of college students, and the term sublet is a very, like, very common thing where you take over somebody else's lease. I hate that now I have heard the term fucking sub-farm. Speaking of a fucking child. Oh, I am disgusted.
The Infant Life Protection
Act. I like how you just, the first part didn't have anything to do with the second part. Like, you're just talking about subletting. It just sounds like a similar word.
Yeah, because, like,
subletting. It's like you're describing your neural activity. You know, like the sublet went off, and that made me think of how awful subfarm is.
I am just walking you through my autism step by step.
Couldn't sub-farming be like a secondary objective in, like, if you're playing Battleship, you know?
It could be a secondary objective if you were playing fucking Stardew Valley.
Sub-farming in New Jersey is a completely different thing. That's when you're trying to get just the right lunch, you know? Trying to get just the right lunch out of these mooks at the deli.
The Infant Life Protection Act of 1897... would empower local authorities to control the registration of nurses responsible for more than one infant under the age of 5 for a period longer than 48 hours.
Okay. Wow. Why?
So that, like, people just can't hand off their babies for, like, a tenner and just say, like,
peace. Oh, that's so tenor. It's okay. Hand me little Johnny and Jill, throws them directly into a fucking garbage bin and leaves. Like...
Just hands him to the was it the Artful Dodger or no? Who was the guy from Oliver Twist who had, like, the cart that he was, like, putting all the children?
Oh my
in the
god, pack? Dude! I can't remember. I think it was the Artful Dodger.
But you know what I'm talking about. I think the Artful Dodger was a kid. I'm thinking of it was Fagin. I'm thinking of
Fagin.
I think it was Fagin.
Yeah,
who ran, like.
Yeah. And Philly, I would have known him if you said it right, which is Fagin. You know, that's what you should have said.
Whoa, Steve, you're going to get us canceled.
What? You don't like Charles Dickens? Charles Dickens' favorite character in Oliver Twist is Fagin.
Oh my god. Sounds like a fucking slur.
A lot of things sound like a slur to a bigot.
Sounds like a slur, Jerry.
It does. It is.
A series of acts passed over the next 70 years, including the Children's Act of 1908, which affirmed under which no infant could be kept in a home that was so unfit and so overcrowded as to endanger its health, and no infant could be kept by an unfit nurse who threatened by neglect or abuse its proper care and maintenance.
Proper care and maintenance? What is a Model T?
The adoption of Children Regulation Act of 1939 gradually placed adoption and foster care under the protection and regulation of the state. And in the 1960s and 70s, as well, there would also be a trend of thousands of West African children who were privately fostered by white families in the UK in a phenomenon known as farming. The biological parents were usually students in the UK who also had a job.
They placed Matt ads Gates in the did, paper. Right?
Looking for foster families to care for their children.
That's what Matt Gaetz did. He was farming little farming South Nester. Americans. Yeah,
yeah. I think there's another term for it. Was it grooming?
Oh yes, that's it. Yes, I've heard that term. Yeah, that's bad though. Was he really doing that? No.
Because there's because his both his parents were still alive.
It doesn't make sense.
And Matt Gaetz is, I think he might have had his parents like pay off his sister because his family bought her a car or whatever.
I don't know how he's not in jail.
Because his father's like one of the richest men in Florida.
Oh, really? Is that it?
And he was the president of the Senate for years.
Just unfucking real.
So the next obsolete profession we're going to be talking about is being a professional hermit,
or a
garden hermit.
Just tell me how. Also, that's amazing. And just tell me how that ended, like baby farming.
Well, it's been replaced by the modern adoption system.
So that's technically okay, because there's still a lot of issues with like people who do not throw 400 babies in a blender, but like they don't take care of kids now. I mean, especially in the Midwest and shit. Like there's no adoption system. It's like fucking draft picks.
Well, there was a part of the reason why like the system exists the way it is because there used to be not like baby farming, but there was people like Georgia Tan, who was this woman who would like essentially steal children from like poor mothers. Like, she would go to a hospital and she would, like, trick mothers into signing away their babies. And then she would sell these, she would essentially sell these babies to, like, rich parents for adoption.
Yeah.
Like, wow. Ric Flair was one of these babies.
What?
Like, his parents, like, bought him from an orphanage that was run by this lady because she was, I believe she was out of Nashville. And
what?
The only reason she got away with it for years of essentially like stealing and selling children. And also there's a lot of evidence that she probably also like sexually abused children was because her father was a judge.
What is this for real?
Yeah. Behind the Bastards, I think, did an episode on her, and there's been some other ones, but she ran this like orphanage, and she sold like if you were in like the people in Hollywood who like adopted like, Katherine Hepburn, I think was one of them. Like her, like I think like three or four of her children came from Georgia Tan. Like she was like the baby sorcerer for the stars.
God damn, bro! I didn't know that.
But yeah, and then she eventually it all came to like an end because her father died, and when her father died, she no longer had any protection, and they just went after her.
That's fucking crazy. Because
this was also in the South and like the. And like, you know, during that era. So it was very much like a crooked judge could like essentially like run the state if he wanted to.
Dude, that's
that's Judge Jerkoff, and he's in charge of everything from here to Buttfuck County. Judge Jerkoff. I know my rights. Boy, you ain't got no rights from here to Buttfuck County.
Don't do it, George. Judge Jerkoff doesn't play games. Judge Jerkoff makes me think of the judge from My Cousin Vinny. I don't know why.
Yeah. The what?
Two Utes. Two what? Next time you come in this courtroom, you're going to wear a suit made of something other than animal. Made of some kind of cloth.
What a great movie.
Professor Gordon Campbell of the University of Leicester suggests that Francis of Paola was among the first of a sort of like garden hermit, sort of professional hermit, early in the 15th century, living in a cave on his father's estate.
You're going to have to somehow define and differentiate the garden hermit from your common house hobbit. So please begin.
Because Francis of Paola, the first one to start this, he was like an actual like Catholic monk, and he founded an order of monks. He founded the order of Minims or Minims.
Mims.
Can't be Mims. Mims is the one that always gets fucked every time there's a storm. Like, well, the storm's largely passing over. Except over there in Mims. Mims have 7,000 lightning strikes in the last 5 minutes and 12 oceans of water pouring down on it.
Because he was of noble birth, and he would later serve as a confidant and advisor to King Charles VIII.
Confidant.
So because he sort of starts this, and this is in Naples is where he originates.
Napoli.
After this, throughout France, estates of dukes and other lords would often include small chapels or other buildings where a resident hermit could remain in attendance.
So my brain just kind of like smudged things together again, and I'm thinking we're talking about baby farming by garden hermits in the like 1500s. So I'm like, just can't wait to see where this goes, because what is their job? You haven't described it yet.
They are a professional hermit. They live. In a structure or something, or a cave or something on the property of a nobleman, and they just like are there.
What?
Yeah. According to Campbell, the first estate with a well-known hermitage, which included a small house, chapel, hermitage. And garden, was Chateau de Gaillon, renovated by Charles Cardinal de Bourbon during the 16th century.
I like how you went like pseudo-French there when the French name came out. The first one was Chateau de Gaillon. It's like it's like the reverse when you're watching like Telemundo and they're just like, "Están haciendo Coca-Cola." And they're just like McDonald's.
Oh my god.
Honeywell. E puedo ir a Honeywell.
In the 1590s, William Cecil and Robert Cecil twice welcomed Elizabeth I to Theobald's house near London with entertainments delivered by a hermit.
Delivered by a hermit? Like, what kind of entertainments? Like, backflips and shit? Or did they just laugh at him because he was poor or something? You know? Look at him, he has no money.
He would do the dance from House Party, you know, and just...
The fucking Blaine Brown over here now?
Normally, this dance is done with two individuals, but because he is a hermit, there's no one to carry on with him. Garden hermits would become popular with the British aristocracy during the 18th and early 19th centuries. Contemporary accounts suggest the Weld family kept an ornamental hermit in a purpose-built hermitage on the Lulworth estate in Dorset.
Why? This doesn't make any sense, but go ahead.
Why?
They also had a eunuch fort and harbor beside an adjoining lake.
I don't get it.
Both Painto and Hawkstone Park were said to have employed ornamental hermits.
You mean Max just stays in the cave? Well, that's crazy.
The one at Painshill, we know, was hired by the Honorable Charles Hamilton for a 7-year term under the strict conditions. He lasted 3 weeks until he was sacked after being discovered in a local pub.
What? This is literally like a homeless person hitting the fucking Powerball. A rich person wants to live on a house on their fucking land just for fucking their kids.
Yeah, give him a room. I like that guy. He's nice.
That guy's pretty funny.
He's got a sign there that says he doesn't have any clothes and he's fully dressed. This guy's hilarious. Bring him in.
That's fucking awesome. Listen, I got 37,000 acres that I live on here. You can live in the outhouse out back.
All you got to do is every Tuesday, right before dinner, when my wife's looking out the window, I want you to take a big dumpy.
this is kind of like Leon in Curb Your Enthusiasm, except Leon's allowed to leave.
Hey, let me ask you a question, Leon. Do you love your color? I fucking love my color. Fucking mahogany.
just lives in the guest house.
Fucking love my color.
Larry feeds him stuff to Larry. Just comes to him for advice.
You gotta get up in that ass, Larry.
Oh my god.
You gotta get up in that hermitage, Larry. You know what's funny is there's a fucking street back in Jersey. It's crazy how certain words trigger things. There's a street in Jersey called Hermitage Avenue, and I don't know how it is now, but when I was still in Jersey, it was still very, very dangerous area. Super low income.
I can't imagine a street named Hermitage Avenue is exactly the safest place.
We're talking
in
like
town.
Civil rights level redlining, leftover poverty. Oh, God. Like just terrible. Yeah. So
the kind of shit where you're driving down that street, your mother's like, lock your doors. Lock your doors.
I don't know if I told this story on the podcast before. I was used to work at this like telemarketer, and there were these two black sisters from Trenton that worked there. And I'm not saying sisters and like the, you know, hey, sister, go. Sister. I'm yeah, saying like
there
they
we
were.
All right. The racism is just
they were the related. All right. I wasn't saying my brothers. I wasn't saying that. What I'm saying is they're related. And one day she needed a ride home, and I said, "Where do you live?" And she's like, "Hermitage." And I'm like, I looked at her, and she just started laughing. She's like, "I'm just playing. You, I know you can't go." I'm just like, "Oh shit, I can't drive there." Nah,
you're way too white for that.
Oh, dude, I'm lily white. It's white as a sheet. It's ridiculous.
I just want to state, you know, that Steve's, you know, views do not represent the Tribal Arrow Crow Club.
I didn't say anything. What did I say?
We're very troubled by what he said. We will work hard.
I told her that I'd give her a ride to the place because I wasn't scared, but she said I couldn't go. What the fuck is a hermit, Steve? What do they do? Why is it just? Is it like a jester?
They're just around, and they just give you ask advice, and they're just there. You know, like the king. You know, you got your guy that just like hangs out on the property.
So they're like Dionysus or something. Not Dionysus. Diogenes of Sinope. Yeah. You know? Yeah. Just being a cynic.
He just gets rip shit and just like roasts you all day.
like
Diogenes.
Nice suit, Earl. Looked like something the horse shit out of.
the trend of garden hermits continued through the 1830s, although the idea became less popular as the state landscaping concepts evolved. 1830s. Even in the 18th and 19th centuries, though, garden hermits were considered novelties and eccentricities. Grottos have become more popular during the 18th century as a place to withdraw for meditation, relaxation, reflection. With an increased focus on industrialism and production, contemplative garden meditation was viewed by some as an extravagance. With the lack of personal free time in combination with an increase in disposable income, the popularity of the natural garden landscaping and the rise of the neoclassical culture established an environment in which the idea of garden hermits as novelty guests became popular.
Oh, and so I thought you were going the other way with that. Like it became less popular.
Ah,
well, no, I'm just saying that it was considered a novelty, but the people who did do it, that's the reason why they did it.
Yeah,
because they had less free time.
Right.
But grottos became more popular.
I see.
It's like your own personal private escape.
We all have that.
And so, In some instances, hermits were simply represented or hinted at rather than personified. Outside a folly or grotto, a small table and chair, reading glasses, and a classical text might be placed, suggesting that it was where a hermit lived.
Okay, so now we're talking about, like, Disney World-level fucking theatrics and fucking set design. Where, like, I have a fake house, and outside the house I'm gonna put a table and some glasses and a fake fucking, you know, a fake glass of, like, iced tea or some shit.
Do they get a vacation? For fuck's sake. I mean, it's a job.
Well, if they want to get paid, they don't.
Jeez.
That's wild.
Later, suggestions were made of hermits that they were replaced with actual hermits, men hired for the sole purpose of inhabiting a small structure and functioning as any other garden ornament.
Literally, it's like driving down, like, whatever your city's homeless, like, strip is, and just grabbing somebody and be like, you're pretty fucking funny, come live in my backyard. Like, that's literally all this is.
Hermits would sometimes be asked to make themselves available to guests, answering questions and providing counsel. In some cases, the hermits would not communicate with visitors, functioning instead like a perpetual stage play or live diorama.
This is like Legend of Bagger Vance.
Wow.
This is like
Did you see Will Smith's like recent attempt to make a new song?
Stop it.
I'm not even kidding. It's very bad. It's very bad.
As a total side note, now that we're talking about like cultural commentary, did you guys see?
This was a month ago, dude. He made a song called "I Like Pretty Girls."
Oh my god!
I mean, everything we've heard about him says otherwise.
The opposite,
basically. Yeah. But have you guys seen the new South Park?
I've seen clips from it. I saw like
you need to watch it.
Yeah.
My wife watched it. I had a long week, and I'm still in pain, so I haven't done
shit. It's one of those things that I haven't laughed at South Park since probably 2003. And
she was definitely laughing on it.
Probably one of the funniest things I have ever seen from South Park. It was excellent. Please go watch it if you haven't seen it.
Definitely. Yeah, definitely.
So generally, as well, like we've stated with the hermit, that generally in return for the like having the for their services and being in residence, they would receive a stipend in addition to the room and board they received.
Like that's cool. Like I'd go live in some like rich person's backyard if they paid me to live back there and like free room and board. Dog,
it's like
you have like high speed internet back there, and you're paying me, bro. It's cool, man. I will be your little fucking clown anytime you want. I will be your court jester. What do you need?
It's like that Richard Pryor movie, the Toy.
I don't think I've seen it.
You never? They used to play it on Comedy Central all the time. But,
I don't think I've seen it.
It's a film with, I think it's The Toy. Yeah, it's a movie where Richard Pryor is essentially like bought by like a billionaire, paid by a millionaire to like be like a friend to his son.
Mm-hmm. Interesting.
Yeah, and so it's like him just sort of like helping the like forming like a bond with the kid or whatever because his like dad's like a shitty rich guy. So the next profession we're going to talk about is one that they probably need to bring back in certain parts of the country, and that is the hog reeve.
Of what?
The hog reeve.
What the fuck is a hog reeve?
A hog reeve or hog constable is a colonial New England term for a person constable. Charged with the prevention of appraising charged with the prevention or appraising of damage done by stray swine.
Wait. So you're basically an insurance adjuster for pigs?
Well, yeah, you're like the cops and insurance adjusters for like pigs.
Wow.
Because you know what? With those 50 feral hogs like roll through your backyard and destroy everything, you know, you want to be able, you know, to have the hog reeve come out, make sure you get a good settlement.
They go through bone like butter.
You know,
beware of a man
Who keeps pigs? Thank you, Bricktop.
I kind of want this job. I want to be like an insurance adjuster for pig damage. This is great. This is like my ideal job. Call me once every couple months, but pay me an exorbitant amount of money.
You're gonna find out that like one of your ancestors was like the Hoggreave of like
North Bumbleshire. Yeah.
Of like Massachusetts County. Yeah.
King County.
Oh fuck.
But wandering domestic pigs were a problem to the community due to the extent of damage they would do to gardens and crops by rooting.
Hey, there's still a problem. You get it?
The owners of hogs were responsible for yoking and placing rings in their noses.
Hmm.
If the hogs got loose and became a nuisance in the community, one or more of the men assigned as a Hoggreave would be responsible for capturing and impounding the animal. Okay. If the animal did not have a ring in its nose, then the reeve was responsible for performing the necessary chore for the owner, who would legally be charged a small fee for the service.
So if it didn't look like Rocksteady or Bebop, was it Bebop? Yeah. Because Rocksteady was the rhino, right? Okay.
Yeah. There were punishments and fines established for failing to yoke hogs and to control animals. In an 1865 act of the General Assembly of Prince Edward Island, Canada, owners were required to pay 4 shillings per head to reclaim their animals, and Hoggreaves were permitted to sell unclaimed swine at public auction 48 hours after written notices were posted in public places in that district. So if you don't come and claim your hog, it's getting sold at auction.
That's fucking hilarious.
Jeez.
In New England, the owner of a stray hog in the town of Chelsea, Massachusetts, would be charged 10 shillings per hog.
In Chelsea, tracks. That tracks as a yeah, I believe that.
That's the how office much originated. Your average whore makes now 10 shillings per hog.
The office originated in Anglo-Saxon England when Hoggreaves would be stationed at the doors of cathedrals during services to prevent swine from entering the church.
I like hog constable better.
I just like the fact that they had a guy like shit so bad in like medieval Europe that they have to have a guy to keep the pigs from going inside the church.
Seriously.
That's fucking awesome though, but like
that's just incredible. I wonder if there's like a whole series of techniques. Was there like a world's greatest Hoggreave? Like he's the best.
What is the equivalent today though?
Like a real legend.
Not necessarily like for hogs, but like what's the equivalent of like a totally just mindless, meaningless job that we have today that would be like your job is to like stand there and if anything happens, kind of be the police for this one very specific event.
Hmm.
Like I don't think that kind of shit exists anymore because capitalism is like we're not paying you
for it. Yeah. Like an usher?
Maybe nah, an usher? He's R&B. So... Usher.
Fuck you so much. I fucking hate you.
The office of Hoggreave was among the earliest elected officials to exist in colonial North America. The earliest rights specifically granted to towns in New England concerned the herding of swine, cattle, and the regulation of fences in common fields.
The most boring political shit ever.
The field driver held similar duties, but was not restricted to swine. The Hoggreave was a historical municipal official in Nova Scotia and Prince Edward Island in Canada. It was also listed as elected office in early New Hampshire township records.
Maybe it'll be like the dog catcher. Dog catcher.
I mean, they actually do like do a lot of stuff with the animals.
No, because the dog catcher is much like the sheriff. You don't fucking do anything, bro. You're just a title. The people are on the ground. Boots on the ground are the people that actually do something.
I guess. I've never lived in a place where they had, like, an elected dog catcher.
I don't even know if it was still a thing, to be honest.
I doubt it. You know, they're all like... I mean, there's always an animal. It's always animal control. So now it's, like, more of a wide-ranging thing. And they make less money than they did.
Yeah. Or to budget cuts, they just put it under the county and the sheriff's department.
It's ridiculous.
Oh, yeah, it's true.
Like in this city, my friend who works at our county animal control said that there were just in the last few months, I think, 500 cats that came
Jesus
in.
Fuck.
500 cats. And they have, like, kennel cough issues and, like, all kinds. It's ridiculous. And they barely give them any money. Their budget sucks.
In Massachusetts, towns could vote to stop enforcement of the state law against letting swine run loose. Many towns did so, leaving their hog reefs with nothing to do. As a result of this, it became a joke to elect a man hog reef during the first year of his marriage. You get it?
Yes.
No. I don't get it.
You see, Steve, women.
I don't get it.
You'll find out when you're older.
Oh boy. Oh boy. He's fucking the pig, Steve.
Who?
It's Perus.
Wait, the rooster has sex with both of them? That's Pavois.
The last profession we're going to talk about is the mudlark.
Would you just call me?
Isn't that it sounds like a minor league baseball team? The Swansonville Mudlarks versus the New Bumfords Blue Butts.
I can see the mudlark as like a bird that's like covered in like mud.
Okay. That's what it sounds like to me, too.
Sure.
I'm just saying it's their mascot, you know. You gotta...
Oh, I see what you're saying. The mascot. Okay, yeah. Yeah, just a disgusting bird covered in fucking dirt and shit all the time. Oh, man.
But mudlarks were people who would search the muddy shores of the Thames River at low tide for anything that could be sold. And sometimes also stealing from river traffic as well.
Oh, that's where they went too far. He's a mudlark. He is. Ain't legal, but he's a living.
By at least the late 18th century, people dwelling near the river could scrape a subsistence living doing this. Mudlarks were usually either youngsters aged between 8 and 15 or stronger elderly people. And though most mudlarks were male, girls and women were also scavengers. Becoming a mudlark was usually a choice dictated by poverty and lack of skills. Work conditions were filthy and uncomfortable, as excrement and waste would wash onto the shores from the raw sewage and sometimes also the corpses of humans and cats and dogs. Because for those who don't know, like the Thames is still disgusting to this day, but it was even more disgusting, like almost 200 years ago. Like, I'm pretty sure the Thames can't support, like, life.
Ugh.
No, like, I think
the entire river is just, like, a dead zone. Because we have a couple towns like that and, like, cities like that in the U.S. where it becomes, like, a big deal when they're actually able to have, like, garbage fish in it. But, like, yeah. Like carp can survive in it. Everybody's, like, cheering. Mudlarks would often get cuts from broken glass left on the shore. And the income generated was seldom more than meager, but mudlarks had a degree of independence since their work was subject to the tides, so the hours they worked were entirely at their own discretion, and they also kept everything they made as a result of being their own bosses.
Okay.
Henry Mayhew, in his book London Labor and the London Poor, Extra Volume, 1851, provides a detailed description of this category, and in a later edition of the same work includes the narrative of a mudlark, an interview with a 13-year-old boy, Martin Pryor.
Richard Pryor's like great-great-great-great-great-great-grandson? Or grandfather?
Possibly. Even though he spells it differently. But, you know, they could have changed it at Ellis Island.
It's true.
Although in 1904, a person could still claim to be a mudlark as an occupation, but by then it seems to have no longer been viewed as an acceptable or lawful pursuit.
Yeah. Can you imagine, like, you meet some girl, y'all hit it off, you go on a couple good dates, you go back, you meet her parents, she's like, yeah, he's a mudlark.
Not my house.
You're getting kicked out immediately by the dad.
Dad's gonna have you go outside to spray you down with the hose.
You stay away from my daughter.
By 1936, the word was used to describe swimsuited London school children earning pocket money during the summer holidays by begging passerbys to throw coins into the Thames mud, which they then chased to the amusement of the onlookers.
Oh, so bikini babes right. in the mud.
But more recently, people who use metal detectors and other individuals searching the shore of the Thames for artifacts have described themselves as mudlarks. In London, a license is required from the Port of London Authority for this activity, and it is illegal to search for or remove artifacts of any kind from the shore without one. Okay. Although the regulations changed in 2016, the Port of London Authority states that all the foreshore in the UK has an owner. Metal detecting, searching, or digging is not public right, and as such, it needs the permission of the landowner. The POA and the Crown Estate are the largest landowners of the Thames foreshore and jointly administer a permit which allows metal detecting, searching, or digging. They also support this because they have a useful information on their site for permit holders, including maps, rules and regulations about where digging is and not permitted, and safety and tide tables.
Really?
Occasionally, objects of archaeological value have been because remember they're essentially like digging up garbage.
Okay.
Because this is just like trash. Some of it historical trash, but it's essentially like trash that's washed up on the shore for like 5 centuries.
I mean, it's
occasionally objects of archaeological value have been recovered from the Thames. Depending on their value, these are either reported as treasure under the Treasure Act of 1996 or voluntarily submitted for analysis and review via the Portable Antiquities Scheme. A BBC article in July of 2020 recommended the Thames Discovery Program, a group of historians and volunteers running guided tours for novice mudlarks, and in 2019, the book Mudlarking, Lost and Found on the River Thames by Laura Makelam, was first published.
All right.
And then also A Rag and Bone, A Family History of What We've Thrown Away by Lisa Woollett also examined the subject.
A rag and bone? What did you say?
Yeah, rag and bone pickers.
Rag and bone pickers.
Okay. A rag and bone picker was a profession that it still exists in like parts of the world, but it was someone whose job was to like dig through the garbage and like find whatever could be salvaged and then sell it.
So, okay, so basically a dumpster diver.
Kind of, because they would get rags because they would like essentially like take apart the rag in order to use the thread to make like new cloth. Mm-hmm. And like just use the other bits for other parts of like processes. Okay. But because we don't really like use those for a lot of professions, it's not really done anymore.
Once again, capitalism takes away another great job, puts great men out of work.
The Museum of London, though, has been happy with the outcome of the mudlarks. The finds liaison officer Stuart Wyatt said, "New interesting artifacts are constantly being discovered by mudlarks and brought to the museum. Finds from the Thames are still giving us new information and adding to the collective knowledge. These objects are continuing to enhance our understanding of London's history and the lives of Londoners who inhabited the city over the last 2 millennia.
I mean, if it's for a good cause, like learning about the history of where you live and all that shit, maybe, but
But that's it, boys. That's Made it. A short one this week. Talked about some obsolete professions.
A little quick in and out. Hopefully, the next time we do obsolete professions, it'll include cops. It'll include
gas station attendants in New Jersey.
God. If I pull up the one more pump that says "Please see cashier inside to pay," to like, no, fuck off.
I'm talking about like the guys that pump the gas in New Jersey, like that.
That's
definitely a antiquated job, but like it'll never go away. There's just too many people employed by it.
I think it went away in Oregon.
Yeah. Oregon got rid of it.
Yeah, they passed a law in 2023 that said that you could do self-service.
Yeah, I think we're the last ones. I remember that
growing up in Boston, you could go to a gas station, it would be either self-service or full service. Like, so like in one gas station, you would have different pumps where like if you were just some lazy fuck, you could just go over to like full service and they would come over and do it for you.
That's actually how I learned about it, because when I was a kid, I asked my mom what a full-service gas station was, because I saw it everywhere. Just said, full service, you know? But then there were places that said self-serve and full-service, because I don't know when full-service gas started in Jersey, but I think it was right after the World War II. So I think there were still some places that were kind of, like, local that would still allow you to pump on your own. Mm-hmm. And then that went away slowly. They kind of like lawed it out, you know.
Is there a reason why they want you to do it, or why they want full service attendance? Like, is it just basically like a make work program, or were they afraid of like the average person not being able to fill their car with gasoline?
I'm looking it up because I used to know exactly why. Because
I was talking about it at work, and someone at work said like, well, do you pay them? And I was like, well, you tip them.
Yeah, it was to create jobs. It was for safety and to create jobs in 1949.
Okay. So it was literally the two things I said, make work and for safety. Okay.
That's the only
reason.
It's actually nice, because in the fucking winter when it's cold as shit and you don't feel like getting out of your fucking warm-ass car so you can pump gas, some dude does it for you.
Yeah, which is cool, but it's also like, dude, I'm not tipping you for that shit. I'll just like start the pump, flip the little lever down, and then jump back in my car.
Very few people tip gas station attendants, dude.
That's really shitty.
Well, they're not. That's their job. I'm not tipping everybody that does a job. They don't make
that motherfuckers out there in the cold filling
bro,
your fucking
the only
jacket,
people that in this window. The only people in this whole country who should be tipped are fucking restaurant workers, because of how stupid the fucking system is. Everybody else makes a wage. Like, if you want to tip, like
Uber drivers.
Yeah, they make shitty wages.
Uber drivers.
I'm okay with it. But if you make like, there's no good wage for all those jobs. But for restaurants, and I would say I'll throw Uber drivers in there. Those people, that's just like, they make shit money.
What about
money.
Delivery drivers? Like Pizza Hut delivery drivers?
Fuck that, dude. That's ridiculous. I mean, you basically have to do it, but it's like, I just think it's ridiculous.
I'll tell you right now, they don't get paid shit.
No, they get paid. They get paid nothing. Yeah,
jobs. They don't get paid shit.
I understand tipping. I understand tipping.
Pizza Hut,
but it's fine. I do not like tipping.
$5.99 delivery fee.
Not
Pizza Hut charges you a $5.99 delivery fee that doesn't go to the driver, but it's a $5.99 delivery fee. So what the fuck are you doing with that Pizza Hut?
Yeah. I mean, I tip as someone
driver. What the fuck are you doing for that?
I'm not fucking virtue signaling here. I tip all the time. Like I'm the guy who hits 20% every time. I don't care.
Right.
But, dude. Some of this shit's ridiculous. Like, I came to pick up my own food. I'm not fucking tipping you. Fuck what
Incorrect.
I tip you for.
When I go to fucking Starbucks and they're like, yeah, I feel like I had a tip. No, fuck off. If I go, like, the local, any Starbucks local coffee shop,
I'll tip there.
Not.
Like, if I'm there every day, I'm not tipping. But I'll tip there, like, occasionally, you know, like, if they look super busy. Whenever we go to eat ice cream down the road here, the place is always fucking mobbed. And I'm just like, God damn, these people have to deal with a bunch of shit. I don't buy ice cream very often, so I'll tip real high. But like,
right? But when the people are like, hey, iPad's just gonna ask you a couple questions. No, fuck, it's not. Fuck, it's not.
Yeah,
I'll hit skip so fast your fucking head will spin.
All right, I got a tip for you. Don't take any wood nickels. Good night.
I was gonna say, when I was in Taiwan, I rented a scooter, and another guy I was there with. And we had to fill it up with gas. Apparently, most of the gas stations there are full service. And it was like these two like teenage girls.
Oh, what?
Wearing ill fitting like jackets, like almost like the Guardian Angels like jackets.
Oh, that's no. Awesome. Curtis Sliwa.
That's fucking awesome, dude.
All right, good evening.
Full service too, though, right?
Good night. We're fucking done, boys.
All right. On that note, good night. Good luck.